Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on June 9th, 2015 at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their true story based upon the theme, Oops, I Changed My Mind. This week's story comes to us from Brian Upton and is titled Parting Ways with Henry Miller in Egypt. Thanks for listening.
All right. So this is how I changed my mind in Egypt and had a parting of the ways with the author Henry Miller. And it started out in Arab Spring 2011 and the Tahrir Square Revolution in Egypt. My wife Dina and I decided that it would be a good time to take our kids, our 8 and 10-year-old kids, to Egypt to see the country and to see their family and relatives. My wife's parents had come over from Egypt, and she was born here. But her mom actually brought her to Alexandria, Egypt, to go to an American school. So she has dual citizenship, and she actually had an Egyptian passport at the time. She'd met her relatives and family, but I've never been to Egypt. Our kids had never been there and had never met the family. So it was a really exciting trip. When Dina booked the tickets over there, she got lucky and she was able to get a 3-day layover in Paris on the way to Egypt. So how great was that? I was excited because there's a spectacular bookstore there called Shakespeare and Company that I'd never been to. I don't know how many of you know Shakespeare and Company, but for those that don't, it's a 100-year-old bookstore that was a favorite haunt of the Lost Generation and all sorts of cool characters. And I wanted to check that place out. So we take our trip. We get to Shakespeare and Company in Paris. It's a fantastic bookstore. I wanted to find a cool book, a great souvenir of that bookstore to take with me, something I can't just find anywhere. I was coming up dry, so I thought, well, I'll just come up with a book by somebody that had a connection there. And I thought, Henry Miller. I've never read any Henry Miller, and Tropic of Cancer is supposed to be a big deal, so I'll get that. I go to the Henry Miller section. Of course, there's no Tropic of Cancer. So I don't know any other Henry Miller books. I just look at the shelf, and I see a book called Tropic of Capricorn. So, good enough. It's a tropic. So I picked up Tropic of Capricorn. That's my souvenir of Shakespeare and Company. Stuff it in the suitcase. We finish up Paris, go to Egypt. Go to Cairo, go to Alexandria. Fantastic trip meeting my wife's relatives, my relatives now. And it was just super. I started reading Henry Miller for the first time in Alexandria on our last night there. Our next stop was flying up to Upper Egypt in Luxor, where the Valley of the Kings are and a number of temples. Luxor in the 90s was the site of a terrorist attack on tourists at one of the temples there. And as a result of that, Egypt has co-opted the military to be security for the tourist infrastructure down in Luxor. So what that means is when we get to our hotel in Luxor, we go through a metal screener, and there's military people acting as security in the hotel lobby, which is kind of unusual. It's a really nice lobby, very comfortable lobby. So actually that night, after we'd gone out in the town and we got back to the hotel room, everybody was ready to go to sleep except me because I'm still jet-lagged. So the kids and Dina want the lights out and going to sleep. I told Dina I'll just read down in the lobby. And so I get my Henry Miller book out and I say, I'm going to go down the lobby. And Dina says, you can't do that. I said, why can't I do that? I'm just going to go down to the lobby to read. And she looks at the book and she says, that's pornography. And my face is all wrinkled up. I look at the book and, oh, and the cover of the book, which I didn't really think about when I grabbed it, in Paris, was a very tastefully done black and white photo of a woman from the knees up to the neck, which was all Henry Miller cared about. If any of you have read Henry Miller, it all makes sense. But did I say it was tastefully done? Because it was tastefully done. Very skimpy panties, no top. So in Egypt, absolutely, that qualifies as pornography. So I put the book away and got another book. went down to the lobby, read that, and everything's fine. Watched the military men go up and down the lobby hallway while I'm sitting on my comfortable couch. I go back up to the room to get to sleep, and you know how nighttime is the time when all the great worries come out. Well, I'm trying to get to sleep, and the gravity of this situation is impressed upon me, that I am sitting here in Egypt with pornography, with contraband. And I was dialed right back to high school. When I was in high school, I was in Model UN, and I remember reading a whole bunch of accounts of primarily Westerners that were caught in developing world countries with contraband, usually drugs, and the things that happened to them in prison. And it terrified me, and I remember vividly thinking, I will never go to a country where I could even conceivably be caught with contraband and have something like that happen to me. So I'm on my family vacation with my children in a country like that, carrying contraband, and now I'm stressed. And I'm also remembering, by the way, for anyone that remembers Midnight Express, the movie, not Midnight Run, the Robert De Niro movie, but Midnight Express about the American that got caught with contraband in Turkey and sentenced to life in prison in a Turkish prison. Not an uplifting movie. And I remember when I saw that in college, it reinforced, I will never go to a country like that and be caught with contraband. It's not going to happen. I will avoid those places. So that was my thinking for the night. And the next morning when we got up, I was concerned that that book is sitting in the room and whoever's going to clean the room might come across this pornography, be alarmed, contact the military, my pipeline to prison. So I wasn't sure what to do. I couldn't throw it away. I didn't feel like I could stuff it under a mattress because I thought, A, maids might look under the mattress for things like this, and B, if they're just making the bed, they might come across it. So I did the only thing I could do, which was just wrap it up in a shirt, stick it in a bag, wrap up the bag in some more clothes, and put it in the middle of my suitcase, and hope my suitcase doesn't get ransacked by the maids. And it worked. We went out, saw Valley of the Kings, had a great day, put it out of my mind, all was well. And same day, or next day, same thing. It was pretty much out of my mind for the most part. At night, I was still worried about Midnight Express. But where everything amped up was our next leg of the trip and our final leg of the whole Egypt vacation was to go to Sharm el-Sheikh on the Sinai Peninsula, the Red Sea. So we have to fly from Luxor to Cairo and then back over to Sharm el-Sheikh. And I've got the book in my suitcase because I don't have a good place to dispose of it and there's military patrolling in the lobby. So I'm nervous, and all of my high school Model UN torture accounts and Midnight Express recollections are just forefront of my head. There's nothing to be done, so we checked the suitcase, and I just hoped that nobody was going to be looking in the suitcase. And all I could think of was, I don't know if the airline personnel rifle through suitcases here, I don't know if airport security rifles through suitcases, if they do random checks. But when we went to Egypt, there were far less tourists because of the economy and the political situation than there typically are. So the odds of my suitcase being ransacked and my pornography contraband found were much higher than they otherwise would be, and I was thinking about that. But when we finally get to the airport at Sharm el-Sheikh, we go to the baggage carousel. I am not panicking, but I'm nervous. And I'm waiting for the bag to come out. And you know, I don't know if you guys have the same experience I do. My bag's always the last one out, regardless of the airport. So I had that in mind, and I was prepared. But we waited for a long time for the bags to come out. And finally, my son's suitcase comes out. Okay, good. That means our suitcases are here. That's good. We wait. And then after a while, my daughter Alex's suitcase comes out. Good. We wait. Still no suitcase for me. We wait. My wife's suitcase comes out. Okay, that's good. 3 out of 4. Where is my suitcase? So I'm waiting and waiting, and finally the baggage carousel stops, and my suitcase isn't there. What are the odds that only my suitcase is not showing up? I mean, that's what's screaming in my head amongst all the visuals of Midnight Express. So there weren't a whole lot of English speakers there, but Dina speaks Arabic, and she was able to find one of the airline staffers who assured her that there were no other suitcases there. So my suitcase was gone. He said he'd make some calls. So we waited for 20 minutes, and I'm sweating. He comes back and assures us that the suitcase is in Cairo. It got held up. He doesn't know why. He will look into it and give us a call at the hotel. So rather than spontaneously combust, I just tried to clamp everything down for the sake of the children. And we all went to the hotel, and I was getting panicky. At this point, I was a little panicky because this was way too close to Midnight Express and the prison pipeline than I ever wanted to be. And I was legitimately nervous. So we go there, and then Dina and I are trying to have the conversation without explaining to the kids exactly what's going on, how Daddy brought contraband to Egypt. And we're trying to have the conversation about who's going to go back to the airport when we get this call. And what's that call going to sound like? So we're talking about that, and I say, look, this is my bag, so I should go there because it's not your problem. You shouldn't have to go there. And if something happens with it, then I should be the one to be there. Dina is much more logical, smart, and everything else than I am, and she pointed out the fact that I can't communicate with anybody at the airport. Valid point. And she also, which I found out later, she was putting on a good face because she was as panicked as I was. But at the time, I didn't know that. And she said, I'm sure this is just a mix-up and it's just like, you know, a random mistake. So let me go to the airport and clear it up. Okay. We got a call after we sweated all afternoon. And all I can think about was what I've already told you. And we waited all afternoon for that call. And I'm trying to figure out, how do we react when one of us is arrested in a foreign country and the other has to take care of the kids and get them back? What's the number of the consulate, the embassy? We finally get a call, and they said, our suitcase is here, so we can go pick it up. And that's all they told us, so at least there's no bad news over the phone. There was no military guy knocking on our door. But Dina goes off to the airport, and so I'm left with the kids, and I'm just realizing, you know, she is not only in Egypt's eyes an Egyptian citizen, but I'm also realizing that the bag that I used for this trip was her suitcase and had her identification on it. So if they rifled through and found our pornography in our suitcase, it would have her name on it, and she's an Egyptian citizen, and that could make things a lot more difficult if we're trying to extricate ourselves out of criminal charges in Egypt. So that's how I managed to ramp up the stress level in my head while she was gone, and it was kind of fever pitch. She comes back finally after about 45 minutes, and she's got my suitcase. And my suitcase is unmolested, and Henry Miller is in the middle of it all wrapped up just like it was in Luxor. So that was a huge relief. And my whole crescendo of panic and stress and Midnight Express was receding. But it left a heavy residue of paranoia. Because now I see this book, this Henry Miller book that I don't want to see again, that's ruined my vacation, caused me more stress than I've had in years. I'm getting rid of this book. How do I get rid of the book? Because the wastebasket, the mattress thing, it's the same as the hotel in Luxor. I don't have a good choice here. So I just decided I'm destroying the book. I'm going outside. I saw wastebaskets in the hallways. I'm going to destroy it. And I told Dina that, and she said, all you have to do is rip up the cover. The rest is fine. And I'd read enough of the Henry Miller book already to realize that if somebody were to see me throw out the book, fish it out, and leaf through it, the text is much more pornographic than the tastefully done black and white photo on the cover. So I didn't want to risk it because I was completely paranoid at this point. So paranoid that rather than use the wastebasket on our hallway, I went up two flights of stairs. I told Dean and the kids, I'm going to meet you in the restaurant. Go. So they left. I went up two flights of stairs. I ripped up the cover. And I didn't want to just throw the book in the wastebasket because you all realize that somebody could just walk around the corner out of the elevator and see me fish out the book and then pipeline to prison. So I figured if I had defaced it, nobody would fish it out of the wastebasket. So I'm just frantically tearing up the pages, stuffing them in the wastebasket, about a quarter of the book, go down a flight of stairs, repeat, go down a flight, skip my floor, because I'm not going to have the incriminating evidence on my floor. I'm a smart criminal, right? Go down one more floor, shred everything while I'm looking around madly, stuff it in the wastebasket, and then I've just got a little bit left. So I go to the restaurant. There's a bathroom off the restaurant. I walk in casually with the book under my shirt. I look in the bathroom. There's nobody in there. So I shred the rest of the book, stuff it in the wastebasket, grab some paper towels, stuff it over those pages, and then, and only then, after Henry Miller is safely stuffed in the wastebasket of the restaurant bathroom, I went over, had dinner with Dean and the kids. We snorkeled. We scuba dived. We had a great vacation. I was free, and it was a fantastic feeling. We ended our vacation, and 2 months later, it's my birthday. Dina gave me a copy of Tropic of Cancer by Henry Miller. So I was finally able to read Tropic of Cancer, and I didn't like it very much.
Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. The bookstore at the University of Montana. A local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. TopHatLounge.com. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel, custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provide the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersmusic.com. Rock and Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. Rockandrudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavolny of Missoula Soundworks. MissoulaSoundworks.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and especially to the storytellers. Brian Upton, Caitlin Hoffmeister, Tracy Worley, Stephen Begletter, Alex Alvier, Kelly Buma, Carla Thielen, and Lily Gladstone. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about themes for 2016. TellUsSomething.org. Thanks for listening.